you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk. I'm Sharon McNary, filling in for Larry today as he takes a well-deserved break this week. A little bit later this hour, we'll be talking about a unionizing campaign in an Amazon warehouse in Alabama and the ripple effects it'll have on tech and labor movements nationwide, including here in California. But first, joining us for our daily update on COVID-19 is Dr. Annabelle D. St. Maurice, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics in the Division of Infectious Diseases and the Co-Chief Infection Prevention Officer at the University of California, Los Angeles, Mattel Children's Hospital. As usual, if you have any medical questions related to COVID-19, we will take your calls at 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on our Facebook page. So thank you for taking the time, Dr. D. St. Maurice. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
First time being in the building in a whole year. I actually put on mascara and ran around the hallways. They painted the elevator. I didn't find any spare boxes of donuts. So it's very different. So, well, getting right to it. Yesterday, California officials decided they would target 40% of the vaccine supply to underserved areas, like South LA and the east side of LA. These are places that have lagged behind in vaccination in contrast to whiter areas of Southern California. What do you think about this shift in strategy? I mean, are there other ways to address racial disparities that we've been seeing in the vaccination in California?
I think this is a great first step. I think having more access to vaccines in these areas that are really hard hit by COVID makes sense. We want everyone to get vaccinated, but particularly people who are at high risk of having serious complications from COVID-19. So I think this is a good first step. I think we do need to be sure that we make it easy for people to get vaccinated. So that means making sure that people who might have problems with getting to and from some of the vaccine sites have access to the vaccine where they are. I also think education is really important, making sure that people understand what the vaccines are and how safe and effective they are is really key.
Well, we know part of what the mayor announced, I think it was yesterday, was that there was a lot of money now for free and reduced priced Uber rides to get to these places. How do you expect them to actually verify, you know, who should be getting the vaccines, who should wait?
Yeah, I think this is a challenge all along. We've heard about situations where individuals from communities that are not high risk are going to some of these communities and vaccine sites and getting the vaccine that way. So I think verification and making sure that the people who truly need the vaccine the most are getting it first is a challenge.
For sure, for sure. The whole line jumping thing or people taking codes that were meant for people who are more directly affected by the COVID disease. Another thing, we're seeing a few states completely lifting the mandate to wear masks, but now the CDC is recommending people double up on masks. Now, I've sewn hundreds of masks for charity, and even I don't double up on the masks, so it's kind of hard to wrap your brain around it. But Gavin Newsom and other local officials are endorsing this recommendation. What does it mean to wear a double mask, and what's the best way to do this?
So I think that the double masking part has been a little bit oversimplified. I think that the main message that CDC and California Department of Public Health are trying to send is that your mask should be well fitted. What that means is for some of these cloth masks, having a nose wire so that it sits comfortably along your nose and really stays up is really important, and that it tries to reduce the number of gaps on your face. For some people, that might mean wearing a double mask. If their single cloth mask doesn't fit, then putting a surgical mask with that cloth mask. But they also have recommendations for ways to adjust the fit of your cloth mask. For healthcare providers, we have different types of masks that fit our face a little bit better. So it's less of an issue for hospitals and healthcare providers.
You know, I found that the wire tie that comes on bags of coffee is a really good nose wire. It really holds its shape.
Yeah, and there are ways, actually, there's a YouTube video on the CDC website that has a way that you can knot and tuck your, if you do use a disposable mask, to knot and tuck that mask so that it fits a little bit better. But I agree, having that nose wire, there are some that you can buy on Etsy or other websites that you can kind of sew in there. And there are other ways you can kind of adjust the fit of your mask. There are mask fitters that you can put it over a cloth mask, for example, if it doesn't fit quite right. But most of the time, I think you can tie it in a way that it kind of sits up and seals pretty well without necessarily going to any extremes.
Now, if you have medical questions related to COVID-19 for Dr. D. St. Maurice, we're taking your calls at 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. We can read it on the air. Now, is anybody actually doubling up on an N95 mask?
That's actually not a good idea, and CDC specifically says not to do that. And the reason for that is that N95 masks, particularly in the hospital setting, are fit tested, which means that every individual who wears an N95 in the hospital has been tested to make sure that that N95 fits them appropriately. When you add another mask on top of that, it can alter the fit of that mask so that it no longer has a good seal.
Well, that makes sense. The one I like best is the KN95. It's actually feels like the easiest to breathe through, even though I've made all these cloth masks. Let's talk about kids a little bit. You're in pediatrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Pasadena Unified School District yesterday joined some other Los Angeles County schools to bring elementary students back to campus by the end of the month. Now, later we'll be talking about kids returning to in-person instruction, but after a full year of being super careful, I can imagine parents would be very nervous about what their kids might pick up at school and bring home. What should parents be alert to with their kids, and where can they kind of rest easy?
Yeah, I think this is on the top of minds of a lot of parents. Certainly, we've all been isolating and probably all have anxiety about returning to work or returning to school in person. I think the most important thing for parents is to try and prepare their children before they go to school. So remind them to wear a mask, to wash their hands, and try and practice the physical distancing that we've all been doing for the past year. I think the other thing is just making sure they're attuned to their children's symptoms. Kids, as you, I'm sure, are aware, sometimes are hard to take a history from. So it's hard to figure out how they're feeling. And I think that's another key thing, since children may have milder symptoms of COVID-19 than adults. So really making sure that they're in tune with how their child's feeling in order to determine whether or not they need to get tested or need to stay home from school so they don't spread COVID-19 to others.
And do we see the same symptoms in kids as adults if they're getting COVID?
So kids tend to have milder symptoms, so they might actually not have any symptoms at all, but typically they have milder symptoms than adults. So they may not have quite as much fever and might not present with as severe illness, so it might just present a little bit more like a cold.
Wow. So we're taking questions if anybody wants to offer one. 866-893-5722. You know, this is a fairly young disease, COVID-19. It's been around a bit more than a year, and we're constantly learning of new symptoms. You know, you lose your taste and your smell, you get the horrible effects on your lungs, that brain fog or COVID toast. The latest thing I read about is called COVID tongue, this fuzzy yellow-white coating on the tongue. What is that? And how do you know if you've got it? And is there actually a treatment for it?
Yeah, I think most of us are very surprised by all of the manifestations of COVID-19 and all of the symptoms. I've recently read a report from the British Journal of Dermatology where they looked at COVID-19 patients and saw that a lot of them had changes in their oral mucosa. So things like you said, a fuzzy tongue or ulcers in their mouth. But we don't really understand what causes it. And there are other viral illnesses actually as well that are associated with kind of oral changes. So I think we still need to find out more about it, but it's just another evidence that we're still continuing to learn about COVID-19. We have a lot of work to do.
Is there some particular reason all these different symptoms keep popping up?
Well, I think honestly, it's just we have millions of people infected with COVID-19, and we keep seeing more and more evidence of different symptoms, and it's because everyone's paying attention to it.
So we're still learning.
Right.
So here's where my own PTSD kicks in after a year of COVID and COVID precautions. You know, it feels like with the rollout of these vaccines to more and more people, we're on this swifter path toward everything reopening. But as government and official restrictions fall away, what precautions, aside from the usual mask wearing and hand washing and distancing, should we still be taking to keep ourselves and others safe? I mean, avoid indoor dining, travel in airplanes. What should we still not be doing?
Yeah, so as you know, in LA County in particular, indoor dining isn't open yet. So I think that, as you can imagine, is a little bit higher risk than outdoor dining because there's recirculation of air and people might be more crowded. So I think at this time, I would certainly avoid that since that's not allowed under LA County rules for good reason, since we're still seeing a lot of transmission. And I think really until rates go down much lower, we should try and reduce our risk of getting COVID-19. Now that rates are decreasing, we should just continue to follow the same rules. Another important thing is just getting the vaccine when it's available for you. We know that the vaccines right now, all three of them, are very safe and effective. So as soon as your chance comes up to get the vaccine, just get it as soon as possible, and that'll continue to reduce your risk.
So a couple people have called in with questions. Kathy from Palms wants to know, for people who are at high risk, are there any recommendations in terms of getting the Pfizer versus the Moderna vaccines as opposed to the Johnson & Johnson?
So I say the best vaccine is the one that's in your arm. None of these vaccines have been compared in head-to-head trials, so it's really hard to compare one vaccine against another. And they were studied at different times in the pandemic. So I would just get whichever vaccine is available for you. There's no evidence that one is better than another, considering that they just haven't been studied in head-to-head trials.
Got it. Well, now, here's one I haven't heard before. Tony from Walnut wants to know, in 10 days, he's scheduled to get the COVID vaccine, but he takes a lot of supplements. So he wants to know if he should suspend those for now until he gets the vaccine.
So I think it depends on the type of supplement. Most supplements, if they're over-the-counter and kind of vitamins, that type of thing, really shouldn't interfere with the vaccine. But if he has any questions, he should talk to his primary care doctor before getting the vaccine. But typically, there are very few things that we would recommend stopping prior to getting a vaccine, but probably a good idea to talk to your own physician about it.
Such good questions. We've got Krista in South LA. She says, for those of us who've had the COVID-19 virus already, how much time should we wait after having the virus before getting the vaccine?
This is a great question. So first and foremost, if you have COVID-19 right now, you shouldn't get your vaccine until you're no longer infectious. We certainly don't want our vaccine sites to turn into super spreader events. So certainly finish your isolation period and then go and get your vaccine when you're no longer infectious. But it's recommended that you can choose to wait 90 days from your infection if you want before getting your vaccine. There's a possibility that if you get it before the 90 days, you might have a little bit more fever, muscle aches, kind of fatigue than somebody who didn't have COVID-19. But it's really kind of a decision that you should make and probably talk to your physician about it. But definitely wait until you're no longer infectious before getting the vaccine, and then potentially consider deferring it for about 90 days from your infection. But that's kind of a personal decision and something that you can certainly discuss with your doctor.
And then Sabrina tweets at AirTalk, wants to know when we'll know if vaccines actually prevent spreading of COVID as well.
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question. So I think more data is coming out demonstrating that likely they do reduce transmission. And I think it's also really important to note that as the vaccines have rolled out nationally, we've seen decreases in COVID-19 cases. So that suggests that they are probably reducing transmission as well. But as scientists, we always want to know the data from clinical trials and studies. So we're still waiting for that from all of the vaccine manufacturers and still waiting kind of for that hard science before making any conclusions.
Wow. And I know you can answer this one really quickly. Do you still need a flu shot after getting both doses of the COVID vaccine?
Yes. So flu is not currently a big issue in LA County, but we still recommend that you do get your flu shot. We would recommend that you wait 2 weeks after you've gotten the COVID vaccine before getting your flu shot, just in case the immune system is kind of overwhelmed from the vaccine, and you might not get necessarily as good of a response to the flu shots. We recommend waiting just a couple weeks before getting that flu shot after having a COVID vaccine. And same goes before you get your COVID vaccine. We recommend that you try to get no immunizations 2 weeks in advance of getting that COVID vaccine. But definitely recommend getting your flu shot when it's available for you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Annabelle D. St. Maurice. It's been great to hear you speak common sense to us from your medical position.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Annabelle de St. Maurice, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics in the Division of Infectious Diseases and the Co-Chief Infection Prevention Officer at the University of California, Los Angeles, Mattel Children's Hospital. Coming up next, we'll talk with Representatives Redondo and Glendora Unified School Districts, as well as Long Beach Mayor Robert Garcia, about the process of reopening their schools. Plus, Air Talk will be back in a moment on 89.3 KPCC.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.